From Milieu Media Group, in association with Sons and Doubters, this is The Relay, a show about embracing the varied perspectives of the human experience across the racial spectrum, with your hosts, Luke Bronner, and me, Aaron Hale. Welcome, friends, to episode one of The Relay. I'm Luke Bronner.
And I'm Aaron Hale.
Some of you may know us from another show that we host called Sons and Doubters, a show about faith and doubt. And we've done a few other kind of creative collaborations together over the years. But this is a thing that we really wanted to do together, was to have a very nuanced conversation about a very complex topic.
Yeah.
The topic of kind of racial equality, race relations, racial justice, I don't know, however you want to brand that. And we're going into it knowing a couple of things, knowing first of all that we are not great at nuanced dialogue. Like, we are idiots most of the time when we start recording. And so it's going to be a challenge for us to really know how to do this. But
we're just requesting that you give us grace as we do this. I know. And the other thing is that Luke and I are both white men in our 30s. And so we know that, like, of all the demographics or whatever, we are very privileged, and we recognize that. And so we're not coming into this lightly at all. This is something that you and I have talked about quite a bit, and even just the two of us without even a podcast in mind, just had a conversation about this, and it's been a long road of, like, what do we do? What do we do? What do we do?
Yeah.
And feeling like maybe we can't do anything. Maybe we don't have the right to be involved in this conversation. And we ultimately disagreed with that idea.
Yeah, pretty profoundly, I think. Like, in fact, not only do we have a right, but we have a responsibility to use our voice for a conversation that we think really, really matters. And so we're approaching it with reverence. And essentially what we want to do with this show is to model, to the best of our ability, empathy. So we think that with all of the kind of racial tension that exists in our country right now, and has especially, I mean, always has, but especially it's heated over the last year since the shooting in Ferguson, the riots in Ferguson. Things have just been, you know, it's tense in our country, and increasingly so. Mm-hmm. And so every time there's like a new police shooting or something like that that comes out, Aaron and I look at each other and we're like, how do we contribute? And so the thing that we should say from the very, very beginning, though, this is not going to be a show about police relations, police brutality. It's not, that's not what we're talking about. That was the catalyst for the show. It's the thing that sparked this conversation for us. But we're not here to, like, pick sides. I mean, we're quite the opposite. We're here to communicate the idea that, like, we are actually all on the same side.
And, there are no sides.
And need to be. We need to be on the same side. That may not be a reality yet, but that's the goal. And so the other thing we would offer, and we'll do this at the start of every episode, we just want to invite you, especially if you're coming to this podcast with pretty established opinions on this topic, we just invite you to take a deep breath. Our goal is not to upset anybody. Our goal is not to frustrate you or agitate you or anything like that. We want you to actually just take a minute and listen. And that's what we're going to do too. We're just going to take a deep breath, and we're going to listen to the perspective of someone who is experiencing a life in a different way than we are. So welcome to The Relay. With us today is my good friend, Calvin Venus. Calvin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, you guys.
Now, that is your real last name, right?
I'm not a wrestler. I'm not anything else.
Okay.
Actually, like, I don't remember what I asked you, but I was like, is that his real last name?
Yeah, it's my real name.
Yeah.
That's the name they
it's
gave me.
It's a great name.
Yeah. It is a great
actually,
name.
Actually, my first name is not exactly Calvin.
What is it?
Calvin, but everyone kept butchering my name when I was in high school, so I've just, like, just call me Calvin.
Embrace
Calvin. Calvin.
Calvin.
So Carl, yeah, it's just an R in between the A and the L.
Oh, Carlvin.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
So it's like Carl and Calvin.
I'm going to change it in my phone so that I want to call you by your actual name.
Oh, cool. Do so.
So,
but generally, everyone calls me Calvin.
Now I don't know what to say for the rest of the episode. I feel weird if I say Calvin.
No,
but
don't.
I look at you and I see Calvin.
All my life.
He prefers Mr. Venus anyway. Yeah. So it's totally fine.
Man, thanks for coming on the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about kind of who you are? You're an audio engineer. Tell us who you are.
Yeah. So I'm from Britain, as you can probably tell, London, South London to be exact. And I now live here in Houston. I'm married a Houstonian by name Kelly. And that was almost 5 years ago to the day.
Wow.
Interesting enough. Very close, yeah.
Did you meet her in UK or did you meet her?
Technically, yes. I met her online. I was in the UK. She was here.
That's awesome.
So, nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, Christian Mingle.
Awesome.
Yeah. But, yeah, I'm an audio engineer. That's what I studied in London, and now I'm here. I did try marketing, and I just really wanted to stick close to my passion, so I've set up a business, and it's about 2 years old now, and I think I'm doing all right.
When you play in a band, right?
Yes.
Kinda. Yes-ish. You sort Ish. Of play in
yeah,
a band.
Yeah, you know how bands are.
Yeah.
So I think we're going for a pivoting stage.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way I can say it.
And you play
By
bass.
The time this goes out, I'll play bass. Bass. Yeah, kind of. I dabble. I fake it well. Yeah.
He fakes the bass.
Fakes the bass.
I like that.
And then some slaps the bass, I fakes the bass.
And you're also on staff at a private school here in town?
Yes, that's right. Houston Christian High School.
And what's your role there?
So I do all the technology, AV, coach soccer, and football, as I call it. And anytime I can mentor boys, I think it's just a great opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I've lived the life.
So. Yeah. Well, and so that's how you and I know each other. I've occasionally will come over and lead worship at the high school like their chapel service or whatever. And if you are new to Aaron and I guess we should kind of tell who we are too, in case you're not all sons and daughters people. I'm a pastor at a church here in Houston. I lead worship, and Aaron's kind of an itinerant worship leader, travels around playing music and leading worship for churches and all kinds of creative things. But that's kind of Aaron and my background. That's how we know each other, is just from being in the same musical circles over the years. But that's also how I know you. You've run sound for me several times when I come over to high school. And so.
And you sound good.
Thanks. Appreciate that.
That's
what I was looking for. I was trying to.
that whole thing was just.
I was fishing. So man, we've already told you kind of what the show is about, what we're trying to do, the conversation we want to have. But one thing that we know is that to have such a complex or nuanced conversation about such a complex topic, we're going to have to take small bites. And so today we just want to talk about the idea of perspective, kind of the presuppositions that we all come at any conversation with. And to get there, what I actually want to hear about is not your experience as a black man, but your experience as a British man. I just want you to kind of tell us a little bit about what life looked like for you or looks like in the UK.
Okay.
That could be growing up. That could be, you know, the last several years you were there, however you want to approach that.
I would say it's very complicated, purely because my parents are from the West Indies.
Okay.
So they have a third world view of life for most of their younger years. I think they both moved to England when they were in their late teens. So they've already grown up and kind of have an idea of how life should be, at least when they build up their friends and start dreaming of what they want to be. And they also grown up with their grandparents. So when they moved to Britain and then I came along, I had a very, very strong West Indian culture at home. I walk out the door and then there's Britain. it's a crazy, crazy thing, because obviously West Indian English is probably in certain ways more English than actual English. Mm. But I really struggled. I didn't know who I was. I wasn't British enough to be British. I wasn't West Indian enough to be West Indian. Mm. Yeah, so it was complicated from day one. And then, you know, obviously, you know, I'll talk about more about Britain, but obviously now here, I'm not African-American. It's very odd. I'm sort of seeing this as one of them, but I'm not one of them. So yeah, it's very interesting. But my dad helped me through it from the age of four. I encountered racism on a track field. I was the second fastest guy in school. And there's this other guy who is mixed race. That's how we call it, mixed race, or half caste, which is now a word that's been abolished in Britain. And obviously Britain's had its struggle with race and what to call people. Just for the record, I am a Afro-Caribbean Brit.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting, right?
Yeah.
Afro-Caribbean Brit. So obviously, if you look at the slave trade, African, families from the Caribbean. So in the title, that explains who I am in Britain. So that's what I've known it all my life. So yeah, to cut a long story short, I remember, you know, on a track, my mixed race friend said, you're not going to beat me. I said to him, but we're brothers, you know, because I just thought that was a galvanite. We went to an all white school. Mm. So now you can understand why. Sure. I really wanted to feel the, hey, we can sweep this kind of thing. 4 years of age, just running a little race. I don't know how far it was, but, you know, I remember him saying, well, I'm not black. And I was like, what? And he said, I'm not black. I'm more white than I'm black. And it hit me. I was like, how can I be? I've seen your dad and I've seen your mom.
Yeah.
And it knocked me. It just,
yeah.
I lost the race like severely.
Really?
Yeah. My dad was like, what's wrong with you? You know, you've been winning all week and what's going on? So, yeah. And, you know, all throughout sort of infant school to middle school, I was always aware of my color. And I was always aware of the difficulties. I was told to go home to your own country from the age of 8. Like, I heard that.
Wow.
And my dad used to do martial arts, so he taught us martial arts just to protect ourselves, because we hear stories of, you know, people getting bundled into vans or people throwing bananas at you know. And I was into football, soccer, and we'd known some of our soccer heroes who were black. You know, they would have, like, banana skins thrown on the field and stuff. Mm. So it's very, very difficult to sort of look up to people. And obviously, instinctively, you know, when you're a young male, you look up to your father up to a certain age.
Right.
Sure.
You know, so, and yeah. then your dad is not cool enough. And then you try to look for your heroes. And it was difficult. Like, it was, you know, it was basketball stars or football, soccer stars. That was it, you know, or music stars. So I found music because I realized I didn't have a career in sports.
So who were your heroes in music?
Okay, so the obvious one was Bob Marley. Mm. I say the obvious one is because in the West Indian culture, he's like a god.
Mm-hmm.
But he also talked about oppression in the West Indies. Now, I never grown up in the West Indies. For the record, I haven't even been yet.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, if you listen to some of his lyrics, it's always about, you know, strengthening yourself.
Yeah.
My battle was obviously the Bible versus Rastafarian, because I was galvanized, I was uplifted by reggae music.
Sure.
The Bible was a struggle for me because, you know, I couldn't get past white Jesus, you know.
Wow.
So everywhere I went, I saw white Jesus, you know. It may be a sculpture, it may be books in a bookstore, even on TV. Just couldn't get past white Jesus.
Hmm.
You turn on TV, especially growing up in the 80s, every male character was either a criminal or a womanizer.
Sure.
So you couldn't really identify. The Cosby came on show on TV and it changed my life. I was like, wow. Oh, so that's America. Black people doing okay over there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was my perspective.
Yeah.
And then we had copycat shows because in Britain they thought, oh, there's a model that we can. So we had The Real McCoys. It's kind of like a British version of it.
Of Cosby?
Of the Cosbys, yeah.
Nice.
So there wasn't many black people on TV.
Sure.
So I liked everything that was going on in America, you know.
Yeah.
So coming to America was this, it just blew my mind. I was like, wow, you can actually have an all-black cast. We've never seen that
before. The movie Coming to America?
Yeah.
I love it.
So good.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite movies.
So, you know, so there's a little perspective.
Yeah.
You know, we would grow up wearing American, you know, I think I had a Howard University jacket. Didn't even know what Howard University was. I didn't even know it was university.
Yeah.
You know.
That's awesome.
So, you know, and then hip hop really, you know, late 80s and 90s and fashion was synonymous. Growing up with the Wu-Tang Clan and, you know, I had a Wu jacket and,
awesome.
Baggy jeans. There was no point, but there was the struggle for identity in my early years. And I, to a lesser extent, I struggle with that now because I'm not the archetypal Brit.
Yeah.
And I'm not African American.
Sure.
So it took me a long time to embrace who I actually am. That's very, very mixed up. You know, even growing up, actually, most of my friends were Sikh, Muslim, Jewish, you know, the disenfranchised lot.
Know what
I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, Muslims could have been white Muslim from Eastern Europe as well as North Africa and, you know, Western Africa. So. And I knew a lot of about their cultures because their parents had a strong identity and they struggled with theirs when they moved to England. So we kind of we're like the Motley Crue, really.
Yeah. Part of my, the reason that I, like Luke and I even have this conversation, had this conversation in the first place was I was posting on Facebook just as we've been hearing about the things that have gone on over the last year or 2 years, feeling like we have to be involved somehow. I need to be involved somehow. And Luke told you my son is actually from Ethiopia and he's 5 years old now. He's about to be six. And as I'm looking at what's going on in the world, part of the struggle for me is like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I have no idea how to be a dad to somebody who has that, who may, and I'm, and I don't want to put that on him because he may never have that feeling of, I don't know where I belong, or, and he may never have that feeling of not belonging to white people because even though his whole family is white, and not belonging to black people because his family is white, or because he's from Ethiopia, he's not from America, all that stuff. But, and so that's kind of interesting. Like, I'm curious how you, you said you still struggle with that a little bit about your, where you belong.
Yeah.
Tell us how you have gotten to the place where you feel like you know who you are to some degree.
I don't know. I guess I've been shown a different world and I realized that it's useful in the studio because now I can relate to different people because I listen to lots of different types of music.
Yeah.
I'm not tribal when I listen to music like some of my, you know, my friends are. I know black friends who don't listen to black music. So I understand what they're coming at because sometimes black culture in Britain, West Indian culture can be stifling. You feel like you're in a box almost. Mm-hmm. I know why it's there. I know why it's needed in certain areas. We don't have ghettos in London, but there is a ghettoizing when people are kind of red zoned. There is a lot of gentrification in London as well.
Yeah.
As well as here. I think it's more obvious here. But just seeing it in two countries now has kind of made me relaxed because I survived in one, you know, I'm in my late 30s now officially.
Yeah.
And I feel that I'm better prepared to get my daughter through it. What I will say though, for you, I don't know what you're going to go through.
Yeah.
And, you know, over here, I see a lot of white parents with African children, whether they're African-American or African, and I do wonder what it's going to be like, knowing my experience.
You know? Yeah.
My daughter, who's three, we deliberately made sure that she had white dolls and black dolls.
Mm-hmm.
The reason being is because she's going to encounter this in Sunday school.
Sure.
In school when she goes to, if we don't do, you know, homeschooling and work, you know. So we wanted to make sure that we were intentional in sort of illustrating what that looks like in, you know, a little play area.
Yeah.
We don't see many black dolls in Britain. So when I see them over here, I'm like, there's another one, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I wear dreadlocks. So we can't wait to see the first dreadlock doll. Maybe I should invent one. You know, straightened hair versus curly hair.
Sure.
We would go for the curly hair one because straightened hair is a problem in, you know, African-American communities, which is now starting to reach over in Britain. You know, they're talking about, hey, look, you know, we don't have to keep straightening our hair. We're trying to, you know, anglicize ourselves a bit.
Sure.
So there's many struggles, man. I don't know. I've thrown a lot out there.
Yeah. Well, and I don't want to talk a lot about my son.
Mm.
He wears a hat all the time because he doesn't like his hair.
Mm.
I mean, it kills me. And I mean, we live in like a suburb kind of outside of Austin. And I mean, there is no diversity, you know, it's like all white. So we get excited when we see like a black guy walking down the street. We're like, oh, let's meet him, you know, because we want that for our son. Like we want there to be like a culture that is everybody's gathered around the table. You know what I mean?
Well, I'll say it's not all doom and gloom because my dad took me out of a school that was mixed. I was failing in that school. It wasn't a great school. And then he put me into the nearest best school that it could be. And it was an all white school. First, it was a culture shock because it was a high school and I've grown up a certain way.
Sure.
Living in that bubble. But high school years has really taught me how to actually talk to white people.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, I mean, at first, yeah, they're touching my hair and I'm like, get off. You know, it's like a Brillo pad. No, get off. You know.
Yeah.
And then once they get over that, we can actually have conversation. So, you know, your son will have an experience that's different to a lot of the African Americans. Yes. But that does not mean that he's not going to have a bad experience.
Sure.
If he's educated all the way through it.
Right.
You know, my dad was instrumental and you're going to be instrumental in his life, I'm sure.
That's the goal. That's what I think it's important for me and my wife to be at least aware, you know, and like preparing. Like, and that's part of the reason we want to have this show, is because I want to be prepared for when he's getting older and he's got a lot of questions, or he's experiencing things that I have no idea, you know, that I have no experience of. And so we just want to be aware, you know?
Yeah.
So a couple questions for you then. Yeah. And this is going to lead to a point. When you came to the States, you were in your 30s, right?
Yeah.
Had you ever been before?
Yes.
When's the first time you came to the States?
I think it was 2001.
Okay. So you were 21.
One, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about that trip.
Yeah.
You came to the States as a 21-year-old.
Yeah.
What was the culture shock for you? So outside of race, just about like you as a British man, I'm curious what kind of things were different just culturally, again, outside of race. So like, I mean, for example, you've had to correct yourself a few times today from saying football and saying, or clarify, you said soccer. Like, yeah, things like that. Like what types of things were you accustomed to in life that are different here? Or we're just kind of like culture shock or whatever when you got here?
Not completely, because we've got TV, so you see everything that's going on in America. The news is different. You know, we have world news over here. I mean, America's so big, it's world news is what's going on in California and what's going on in Florida. It just feels like it's a bubble here.
Hmm.
You know, you don't really know what's going on in another country. It's very hard for me to, well, I wouldn't say it's hard, because we've got many tools these days on with the phone to find out what's going on in Britain, but we feel so far away. Hmm. Whereas in, at least when I'm in London, I feel closer to Asia, I feel closer to Africa, I feel closer to, you know, the whole European continent and America. It's kind of weird. In America, I find it very, I feel disconnected with the world. Hmm. It's so weird. Even with technology, it's strange.
Okay, so you work in a predominantly, if not entirely, white high school. Are there things that you encounter there when you're talking to high school kids or whatever that you're just like, I can't relate in any way to this kid? I mean, this kid just is coming from a completely different world from me.
Yeah, I mean, these kids have no idea about culture outside of Texas.
Yeah.
and the funny thing is, I think 30% of them have actually been to Britain, but they still have no idea about the world. And we had all these shootings and nobody, and this is a Christian high school, nobody talked about it.
Hmm.
Nobody. And, you know, there are black kids there and they're not talking about it, because I think the reason being is because this is not the place to have these conversations.
Hmm.
And that strikes me as a shock. You know, something massive is happening. And I remember my colleague, I said, man, like I was at work and I was just looking at all these news and I was brought to tears almost, you know? And I told her and she's like, oh, that's terrible. They turned around and walked off. And I was like, that's when it hit me. I was like, oh my goodness. That's why no one's talking about it. It's like no one's addressing it. It's like, let me just, oh, it doesn't apply to me. I can just go back into my bubble. I almost feel sorry for them. I feel sorry for anyone who can't say anything, you know, or they try and, you know, reason it. And what comes out is just more one-sidedness, wherever that may be. It doesn't have to be racist. It could be, that's just terrible, but it doesn't encapsulate the problem.
Yeah.
And it doesn't solve it, but it's like they don't know what to say. And what could they say?
Well, and I think for so many people, and this is kind of the place that we're headed, for so many people, that just feels like a whole different world. That's like, it's terrible that that happened, but it's essentially just a story I heard on the news. They have no actual connection to the community. I mean, even one of those shootings was here in town, but people just don't feel connected to that. And that's kind of the thing that we're trying to get at, is the idea that like we need to be connected. We all need to be connected to this. This is something that involves all of us. And so the reason I'm asking you these questions about kind of the culture shock is because the thing that we really want to illustrate today, I think everybody comes to this conversation, the conversation about race, and most conversations, but especially this conversation about race, with just certain perspective. We come with a particular ideas about what the world looks like. Mm. And inevitably, we all think the world looks for everyone else the way it looked for us growing up. And so my experience as a white man growing up in Texas, I assume when you talk about living in Texas that we have a very similar experience. That's my instinct.
Yeah.
Now, thankfully, I think I'm able to think a little bigger than that today and say, my guess is that you as a black man have a different experience living in Houston than I do. But all we want to acknowledge today, our first little bite of this conversation, is to say we all approach this with certain ideas about what the world looks like, and none of us are actually right. Mm. That doesn't mean we're wrong, but none of us have kind of the whole picture. reality is this thing that exists in the middle of all of us, and we each have one particular perspective. We get to see one angle of it. And the only way we ever get to know what that reality actually looks like, 360 degrees worth, is to share our perspective and to actually approach this conversation listening to the other person and believing that the way that they are describing reality is their reality. And so the reason why we approach this way today is because I think when it comes to race, for some reason, that's such a barrier. It's so hard to kind of cross that barrier. But when it comes to, you know, hearing you talk about your experience as a British person, just what it's like to be British, because I've never been to the UK and I've never been British, my instinct is to trust you. My instinct is to default to you that whatever you say is true. And my experience as a young American boy is irrelevant if I'm hearing about your experience as a young British boy. And so it's that same attitude that I think we need to bring into conversations about race. My default needs to be to trust you first. And if you tell me that life looks different as a black man in America or as a black man in the world than my experience as a white man in the world, I can't tell you that you're wrong because I haven't experienced that version of reality. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So really, that's the whole kind of purpose of this first episode. I think the invitation that we would make for folks today is this week, between this and the next episode, try to acknowledge this. When you're in conversation with folks, try to acknowledge that you come at every conversation with a particular perspective. There's nothing wrong with that. It's a good thing. Your perspective matters.
We should all be practicing at least just being cognizant of our own biases, like at least acknowledging that we have them, because 100% of us have the biases. It's not a bad thing that we have them, but we do need to recognize them and acknowledge the fact that we have them before we can actually
acknowledge them with humility to say that, like, yes, this is my bias, but it doesn't mean that this is the only way reality can be understood.
And then to practice over the next week, like, shutting our mouths and listening to other people's perspectives and thinking and trusting it.
Yeah. Or when you hear something that you can't resonate with, that you're like, no, that's not my experience, in that moment, ask yourself, is that because I have some particular idea already before I heard, you know, this conversation? Did I come into this with a presupposition about what life looks like? And just acknowledge it. I think that's the first thing. That's the first little tiny bite.
And then maybe don't say anything on Facebook for the next week.
Yeah. Man, Mr. Venus, thank you so much for coming and being a part of this
and
just engaging in this conversation with us. And
thanks so much. I can't wait to talk again and pick your brain some more.
Yeah. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
The Relay is brought to you by Milieu Media Group in association with Sons and Doubters. The show is produced by Luke Bronner and Aaron Hale. Theme music was composed and produced by Meaning Machine. You can find them online at meaningmachinemusic.com. Artwork was designed by Heather Hale. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Relay Podcast, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheRelayPodcast. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. Thanks so much for listening.